speaks about Parai, about a Gemara, which those who are learning the Daf Hayomi recently had about Parai. Gemara in Ma'irkot and Daf Yudches. The Gemara says, Amar Avital Mishmei the Rav, Parai Shohaya Bimei Moshe, the Parai of Moshe Rabbeinu's time. There were many Paros, as you know, was a generic name, like Pope John or whatever. Hu Ama Vizikne Ama Uparmashtakai Ama Vizeres. He was an Amatal. His beard was an Amma long. An Amma is a cubit, okay? Right, from here to here, okay? So he was an Amma tall. His beard was an Amma long. And Parmashtakai, which means his organ, was Amma Vizeres, was an Amma and a bit. A Zeres is a small measure. V'kayim ha-shenemar, to fulfill the pasuk, which says in Daniel, U'shval anoshim yokim oleha. The shval anoshim, the lowest of men, lowliest of men, yokim alecha, he will put above you. Adkan, that's the Gemara. Says the Maral, so this, you know, people read this Gemara, they say, my goodness, what are you talking about? It's just like, we're mixing up our holidays. It sounds like, you know, the dwarfs, you know, or whatever it is from the elves, right? You know, not the dwarfs. So, like, what's going on over here? What kind of a ridiculous tiur, right? Even if you would have such a thing as a person who's very, very small, but then with these other things, these other dimensions that are described here, like, what are we talking about? Okay, so what I would like to do here, in trying to explain this, in trying to present what the Maral is saying here, is divide this into sort of three sections. The first is what the Maral presents here as sort of a general approach to understanding this kind of a statement from Chazal, where it describes something which just doesn't seem to in any which way jive with reality about Parah. So the general approach, and then parts two and three would be, well, okay, given that that's the case, why do they highlight it the way they do? What was the aspect of Paro that we're trying to bring out over here that would do this? And we'll focus really, we'll do the third part second, right? Because it's going to give a little bit of a lesser emphasis. Okay, the Maral says like this. He says, there's such a thing as a Tzura Pratis, and there's such a thing as a Tzura Tivis Minis. There's such a thing as a form which something has which is particular to that thing, and then there's such a thing as the form which it has as part of a gene, as part of a genus, as part of a species, as part of something which is out there. And because a person is part of a group, part of a general whole, so therefore they have certain characteristics which they have just as being that. A person generally is going to have, two legs and two arms and eyes and ears and so on and so forth. That's a general facet because of the fact that they're a human being. It's not because they are them specifically, it's because they are a human being. And then they have qualities which are there specifically because of the individual that they are, because of the specific, very, very specific individual that they are. And says the Maral, there's an interaction between these two things such that sometimes what will happen to the person, or what perhaps might have been destined to happen to the person individually, will not necessarily happen to the person because of their more general lot. And the example which he gives, very interesting example which he gives is the following. It says, a person goes to a choze bakochavim. A person goes to a stargazer. And the stargazer looks at that person and he says, I see in your future that you are going to be a great, great king. You're going to rule over nations. Right? The person lives through his life. On his deathbed, he calls in Sister Faye and he says, I want my money back. Right? He says, it never happened. I never became a great king over nations. So he says, so she responds and she says, no, you have to understand. Your specific destiny, the frat, the tzura, was that you should be a great king over nations. The problem was that you are also a part of this nation, the specific nation that you're with. And because that nation was not destined to have greatness, so therefore you're limited within the confines of your nation. Befrat, you as an individual, were destined to meteoric rise, to significant rise. So, you don't ask me for my money back because you know you did become a leader within your community. You didn't become a president, you know, the leader of the world, but you didn't become the leader of the world because not of your gezeira bifrat, not because of your specific individual condition, but because in order for that to happen, you needed the general global condition to be right for it. And as part of the global, or maybe in this case, the national community, you're not able to transcend that. What the Maharal says. It says you have to understand that when a person will be, we're here as individuals, but on the other hand, we're part of a whole, we're part of a greater community, so then when they're going to look at us and they're going to see specific things about us, those things are going to be necessarily, to some degree, curtailed by their need to be part and relate with the whole. Okay, right. Somebody who would be fit. Right, very good. If the whole klal would have been fit for that thing. Says the Maharal, of course, Paro, in fact, was not one amma tall with a beard one amma long. In fact, he did not appear that way when we speak of Parishar Bimei Maisha. But if you would have looked at Tsurasai HaPratis, if you would have tried to look and say, let's look at Paro as an individual, he would have been this freakish appearance. He didn't have it because it's not within the confines of mankind. And therefore, Paro as a human being would not have such an appearance of Amma, Viziknei Amma, and so on and so forth. As a human being, it was much, much more proportional to what we would have expected. It was that general destiny which kept him. But if you would have looked at Paro and Tsuraso Apratis, if you would have had a characterization of Paro, so to speak, left to his own druthers, this is what he would have looked like. Paro by himself would have looked like this. He got lucky, so to speak, because he's part of humankind, so therefore he has the advantages of, to some degree, being normalized within that community, being carried along by the normal traits of a human being, of a regular human being. However, for himself, if it would have been just Paro, if there would have been just one man, so to speak, in the world, and it would have been Paro, and you would have looked at what he would have looked like, what he would have been dressing like, so then this is what it would have been. It's almost to say, you know, that a human being, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a human being such that the head, right, is on top. A human being is Mahalach Shtayim, not Mahalche Arba, right? Other animals, they walk on 4 feet. A human being walks on 2 feet. Right? What's the difference? So, you know, the idea, the notion is very, very beautiful, very magnificent, very simple, that the idea is because a human being, the Reish, the head, is supposed to govern. The head is on top of the rest of the body. The animals, right, so they walk, so the head is often, you know, sort of like much more on an even keel with everything else. Even if they lift up their head and they raise up their head, but it's still, you know, the trunk goes that way, right? There's a little bit more of a parallelism. A human being, right, the head is clearly the top of the pyramid. That's the idea. So tell me something. How about those many times that Chazal characterize people who are daimin lebehema, right? We say, Adam ubehema teishi Hashem. Well, that's actually a positive one, but the Gemara speaks in many places about people who sort of lose their tzelem elokim. So what happens with them? Well, they're still going to walk like that. Why? Because there's tzuras Adam haklolis. In other words, they still are carried by the way man generally looks. They're individuals, but individuals don't escape the general class, the general qualification of what it means to be part of mankind. And therefore, as part of mankind, this is what they look like. If Hashem would have just said, let us make so and so, and there wouldn't have been a general category, and this is what would have been the model of what man would have looked like, this fellow might have been walking around on 4 legs. Right? But it doesn't happen automatically because since he's part of mankind, that transformation will occur. So says the Maharal, and this is, I think, a very, very interesting and important principle in understanding these sort of characterizations which Chazal might give about an individual, to say that, yeah, it's not saying that it ended up looking that way, because Lamaisa, he's within the world, and he's within his general again species, and therefore he's going to be carried by that to some degree. However, left to himself, this is what he would have looked like. Okay, so that's the first thing. You read such a Gemara, you say, I can't believe it, right? You know, all those magnificent engravings and sculptures, and we know how the Egyptians were such sticklers on form. Could you imagine them having a king who looked like the Gemara describes, one arm tall, with a beard that was one arm long, and an organ which was one arm of Azeris? I mean, it's just unfathomable that that would be the case, in fact. That's not the case, in fact. But we're talking here about what Paro, so to speak, would have looked like, not what Paro actually did look like. Maral continues, and he says that you have to understand that when Chazal presented this way, that he was Amma, and his beard was that, and Parmashtikai, and so on and so forth, that all of this is because we would have just said that he was an Amma Tal, and we're trying to speak about the fact that he was small, and in that sense insignificant. It would not really have rendered it that way, because we would have thought that, you know, okay, so he's a small version of the same thing. The disproportion is something that Chazal want very, very much to portray, to show that he was not a gibor, a strong, you know, dynamo in a little package. You know, he wasn't Barbara Mikulski. You know, he was better censor the tapes here. But he wasn't just, you know, small but incredibly strong and intense, right? He was disproportionate. He was just completely out of shape. So that's number one. Now, the presentation, of course, right, of Parmashtikai, Amma Vizeris, that his tool, which for him would be a tool of Zima, tool of immorality, the part of him which was connected to immorality, was larger than him himself. So, of course, you know, that reminds us very, very much of what we have described even more so in the Paro of Avram, the Paro of Bereshis, where Avram came to Mitzrayim, and he knew that the people of Mitzrayim were shtufei zima, that they were overwhelmed by lust, and that they would see a beautiful woman and they wouldn't be able to contain themselves. And as Paro himself told Avram when he sent him away, and he said, leave, right, was because the Mitzrayim are of shtufei zima. They're again overwhelmed by this moral immorality, by this lust. And as we know that what happened with Lot, when Lot left Mitzrayim, and he left Mitzrayim like Avram, taking many, many things from Mitzrayim, except Avram Avinu did not take with him any of the immorality of Mitzrayim, but Lot did. While Lot went into Mitzrayim as a faithful student of Avram, when he came out of Mitzrayim, he was no longer a faithful student of Avram, and he couldn't get along with him, and they had to separate. And what was Lot interested in? He was interested in going to Sodom, which is, you know, the definition of shtufei zima, the definition of the immoral, of the pursuit of the immoral. And so Paro, in a great sense, is characterized that way. And this is the picture of him which Chazal give. Why? Why is this? Why is it that Paro has to be portrayed in this completely, completely crazy, strange way? So I mentioned that there are two ways to see it over here, and one way is, I wanted to go just quickly with the second way. And the second way, which he says, is like this. Because if Paro was normal, there is no way that he would have put up that which we find him putting up. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring his signs, and that Paro would be so resistant and so incorrigible and not able to recognize the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and defer, that was very, very, that required that he had to be to some degree just like out of the box, off the charts. In the Torah, we characterize that as about Hashem hardening Paro's heart. You know, that's the idea. Hashem hardened Paro's heart. He just made him stubborn. But says the Maharal, it's possible that this is part of what the Gemara means. You have to understand, the Gemara's characterization is of Paro bimei Moshe. Paro shei bimei Moshe. You think about it. Paro in the days of Avram Avinu. So what happens? He's this lustful, power-grabbing creep. Right? He goes and they give him Sara Imenu. And he takes Sara Imenu. That night, immediately, things start to go wrong. Plagues strike his house in some form. Nobody says a word to him. Nobody says to him, let Sarah go or else. Just strange things start to happen. Paro immediately says to himself, oh my gosh, it's because of this woman. And he puts two and two together. That fellow, he said she was his sister, but she must not be his sister, she must be his wife. Calls in Avram, he says, why did you do this to me? Why did you tell me it was his sister? It was your sister? And he sends them away. Instant response. Pretty good. Paro of the days of Yosef HaTzadik. The next Paro that we learn about. What happens? So he has this dream, and he can't get rid of the dream, and the interpretations just don't seem to sit with him. So what does he do? So the Yosef comes to him, and Yosef, very, very religious, he says, you know, it's not me, it's from Hashem. And what Hashem is telling you is the following. So he tells him the whole thing, and Paro turns to his advisors and he says, can we find somebody who's going to be so godly? Isha Sheruach Elokim lo like this Yosef, we're going to need his help over here in order to bring about the survival of Mitzrayim. And he goes and he accepts him to his credit, and because of that, Mitzrayim is saved, spared. The plagues which could have come upon the first pyro, the second pyro, were avoided by good common sense response to the word of Hashem. We come to pyro 3 that we read about in the Chumash, pyro of Bimei Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's unbelievable, right? Okay, you know, so maybe, excuse me, there was the first, I should say pyro 4, right? Pyro 3 just tried to enslave the Jews, was worried about them, he had no reason not to, Yosef was already something of a memory, nothing else was going on, no plagues came upon him. But the paro, if it was a fourth paro, right, that we read about, because of it says by Yomas Melch Mitzrayim, did he really die? Didn't he really die? But it seems
whether it was really a
right. That could be Shilashin Ischachuk Zerosa, that wasn't really a new king. But whatever it is, the paro that we know from the story, the paro who says over my dead body, the paro who says you're not going out, I'm not going to leave you. Right, that paro just doesn't get it. That's the paro of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Chazal say that paro, he was just very, very, very odd, a very, very strange being. Says the Maral, and I'll just read to you again this last approach, Shimhoya paro odom yiseder ha'olam uvahana gaso. If paro would have been in any which way normal, if paro would have in any which way fit into the world as we know it, there is no way that he could have been resistant to the word of Hashem. After all the miracles, being part of the world in any normal sense could not have allowed him to deviate from the norms of the world to such an extent. Even though there are Rishoyim that ignore the word of Hashem, to deviate from all this, after all the miracles, after all the word of Hashem, to still not listen, you're like basically excluding yourself from the world. He wasn't like part of the Bria. Says the Maral, he was like not included in the creatures, and therefore he was resistant. And he goes on and he says tartly, and you know it's the way of the lowliest of people to try to assert themselves ridiculously over others, and therefore that's why he was resistant to Hashem. So he says that's the characterization of the Paro Bimei Moshe, and again essentially this is his commentary on how Paro's heart is hardened, right? Instead of it being just, you know, he was a regular guy and Hashem just sort of put this block on his heart that it just would not respond rationally to pressure and to proof, right? Instead, we see this Paro as being some weird creature that doesn't even see itself as a creature and therefore doesn't defer to Hashem Yisbarach. Of course, you know that Chazal tells, the Pasuk says about Paroi, that Paroi said, Li ha'ayri v'ani asisiu, it's my river and I created it. In other words, that was part of his thing, that he denied Hashem Yisbarach. He denied Hashem Yisbarach completely. He denied his existence. He says, I'm the creator. Again, this idea that he was able to somehow overcome Hashem, how could he not to defer to Hashem? It had to be a very, very significant thing. So he could be, the way Maharal understands in this Gemara, that he was just such a lowly creature out of this world that he didn't understand where he fit into the scheme of things, or that he somehow vaunted himself, raised himself up over everything. That's one interpretation which the Maharal gives. The other interpretation which the Maharal gives is much, much more in a certain way, with the way the Pasuk seems to be, the Pasuk cited, the Pasuk of Daniel, of Shval Anoshim Yokim Alecha. And he says basically like this, that the Jewish people fell to the lowest of the low before they rose to their greatest heights. If Kal Yisrael would have been a king under some fellow who would have been right at home in those group pictures from the G8 summit, right? That wouldn't have been such a telling thing about the lowliness of the Jewish people. If Klal Yisrael, however, instead are enslaved to a king and to a kingdom that's so completely, just none of the normal, what seems, trappings of what human magnificence could be, so then that is a testament to how lowly the Jewish people have gone. And in the Golus, certainly in this paradigmatic Golus, which was Mitzrayim, that's where Klal Yisrael goes. You know, in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, the Mishnah tells us that we're supposed to tell the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim by being Maschil B'Ginus U'Mesayim B'Shevach. You start with Ginus, you start with the humiliating, with the insulting, with the degrading, and you end with Shevach, with the greatness. You start from the low to the high. That's the sequence of the story. So there's a discussion. Do we start with the fact that the Jewish people were idol worshippers once upon a time in the days of Terach, which is a certain lowliness, a spiritual lowliness and obliviousness? Or do we just start with the fact that we were slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim? But it's clear that in order to be able to present the Geula, we have to have the notion of going from the deep, deep darkness to the light. We can't just speak about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu carried us on the wings of eagles out of Mitzrayim. We have to talk about how shreklach, how terrible it was in Mitzrayim, how horrible things were. And that's a half of the story. Right, the Egyptians, they made life bitter for us. And we go through that process. When we describe, we're Doresh, we interpret in the Haggadah the whole thing. Right, we go low, low, low. We describe how difficult everything was before we turn it around. Before we turn it around and rise up to the positive points. Now, that by itself we could understand, of course, because if you don't know where you came from, so then you can't really have an appreciation of what it is that you're experiencing. Right, if you don't think about the difficulties of the past, you can't necessarily have an appreciation for the present. You expect, things are always supposed to be this way. It's always this good. And then, the study in contrast creates for a better hallel, creates for a better praise of Hashem. However, no, he says. It's much, much more than that. And I want to read to you a little bit of this. Klal Yisrael only would be able to come to the highest heights from the lowliest lows, because that's the characteristic of Hashem. Hashem's way is that he lifts up people from the lowest point possible. The Jewish people were in the most intense shibud possible. Mitzrayim were the most ruthless, the toughest, the most constricting of taskmasters. He controlled them physically and he controlled them fiscally. And he himself was the lowest. And he was enslaving the Jewish people so totally. That's the idea. For Klal Yisrael to be lifted up, they go and they fall very, 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 very low first. This is the idea which he says. Now, what does it mean? What does it mean? What's the notion? Why is this the case? So there are a couple of ways to look at it that we can talk about. In Mitzrayim specifically, Mitzrayim, you know, Chazal tell us that the Jewish people fell to the literally to the brink. Literally to the brink. Memtes Shari Tuma. The Jewish people had to leave Mitzrayim in a rush because Chazal tell us that they stay there for one more instant. Had they stayed there for one more moment, they could have gone over the point of no return. They would have been so spiritually lost, so overcome by the shiftless, by the lowliness of Mitzrayim, that there would have been no spark left to bring to life, to make into the highest, and to bring the Jewish people to their heights. That was needed. That was essential. That it had to be brought to life. The idea that Klal Yisrael should indeed fall so low, of course, would fall in over here to what the Maharal is speaking about. But what's the idea behind it? So there are those who understand as follows. Yitzias Mitzrayim was the original Geula. It's the paradigm for all Geulos. When we speak on the night of the Seder, what do we say? One of the highlights of the Seder, V'hi sham de la v'seinu v'lanu sh'loy echad bilvad amad aleinu l'chal v'seinu elo shebechol dar v'dar amdim aleinu l'chal v'seinu v'kadosh baruch hu maslim yada. The same promise that of Geula that took us out of Mitzrayim, that same promise continues and continues, and it works in every generation. Right after we say blessed Hashem who keeps his promises to the Jewish people, that's where we say this paragraph. That same promise that saved the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, it helps us in every generation when our enemies stand up against us and want to destroy us far beyond Paro. The same promise will stand for us at every time. Yitzias Mitzrayim was not one of what we call the four exiles. It was the model after which the four exiles and the four redemptions are to be measured, are to be done. And therefore, to some degree, Kolul, including the Yitzias Mitzrayim, is going to be the power to take us out from anything and everything that would exist in the world. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had us sink in Mitzrayim to the lowest and to the most difficult level of bondage, something which would not be, nothing could surpass it, and he took us out from there. Because then that Geula has the consummate power. That the Geula has the ultimate power in order to be able to accomplish everything. If this Geula is going to be the model after which every other Geula is going to be copied, or every other Geula is going to occur, so then this Geula has to have the power to be able to cover everything. And therefore, we do it. You know, it's like if you're going to create a machine, you're going to create a car, whatever it is, so you want to be able to test it under the most adverse possible conditions, even though it's not necessarily going to necessarily be used that way for all these things, but you need it to be ready for the worst possible that would have ever been able to experience. And that's part of, to some degree, what happens over here in Golas Mitzrayim. That's a Mitzrayim factor. That's something which happens there. There's another aspect, and this is really the aspect, this is the one Rabbi Hartman is accenting over here, and those of you who, if you wish to follow on this topic, really gave very much the shiur last Wednesday night, the Parsha shiur last Wednesday night for Shabbos HaGadol, was very much around this issue. You can listen to it if you like. But the idea being like this: HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically connects himself to those who are the farthest away. What do we say in the first paragraph of Hallel? Hallel HaMitzri. Mika Hashem Elokeinu HaMagbihi Lo Shaves. Who is like Hashem our God who sits so high, HaMashpili Lirais B'Shamayim V'Aretz, and who comes to look all the way down here, right, way below, down to the heavens, down to the earth. Morim V'Kadosh Eshkein V'Zdaku Shaluach. Hashem lives all the way up there, and he seeks out those which are the lowliest. We have that, you know, within our society. The Pasuk tells us repeatedly that Hashem considers his major concern and his major preoccupation, right, the poor, the widowed, the orphaned, right, the lonely, the oppressed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's concern is indeed with the Shefelim. And in some sense, that's very, very, very important and very illustrative. Just like Hashem didn't give the Torah on Mount Everest, right, or in the Himalayas, right, but he gave it on Har Sinai, which was this little hump of a mountain, right, somewhere there in the desert. He sought the lowliest one metaphorically. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in that. Now, normally, we see that as something which is being, okay, you know, so humble, right? You choose humility, and therefore this would be the case. But over here, this is not Klal Yisrael choosing humility. This is Klal Yisrael having it forced upon them. But in order to be able to truly demonstrate the extent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interest in the Jewish people, of the notion of that pintleid, of the fact that no matter what, Hashem's still going to find whatever is absolutely there, that little spark that's going to be left in the Jewish people, in order to bring it back, in order to maintain his connection with us, in order to maintain the bris, the covenant which he made with us. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us into this matzav, into the lowest of matzavim, into the lowest of situations, and still pulls us out. Avram Avinu was told that we would be in Golos Mitzrayim, was told that we would go into exile, in response to a question. Remember, what was the question? The question was, B'ma'ed Aki Roshana. Hashem said to him, I'm going to give you this land, and it's going to be your eternal inheritance. And Avraham Avinu says, how do I know? How do I know it's going to be our eternal inheritance? B'mayid aki irashana. How do I know it's going to be an eternal inheritance? Maybe, you know, things will go wrong. I understand you're promising me lots of kids, so I'll have lots of kids. I'll have a big family. But how can you promise me that they will permanently be connected to this land? Maybe they'll do something wrong. Maybe things will turn around, and they'll be separated. And Hashem said, this is how you're going to know. The way you're going to know is that your children, your descendants, they're going to go into exile. They're going to be enslaved. They're going to be in bondage. They're going to be so far removed from this land that nobody, under any circumstance, would think that they would ever be able to rise up again. Neither to simply get out of Mitzrayim as a nation, they would just be lost there as the slave nation, or certainly to be able to come to this land which was recognized even by Terach as the spiritual place. That's why Terach started to head to there himself without a commandment of Lech Lecha. They're going to be so lost in Mitzrayim. They're going to be so on the brink. And yet, I'm going to reach down and I'm going to pick them up and I'm going to take them out of Mitzrayim and I'm going to bring them here to Eretz Yisrael. And what that means is that they can never be severed from this. Because they're going to be holding on by a strand, by a thread. You think that my promise to you is, you know, Avram, you're a good guy. As long as you guys stay good, you'll stay here in Eretz Yisrael. After that, okay, finish, you'll go, and you'll go the way of all who just come and go through the revolving door of history. No. You'll see from Mitzrayim that there's no revolving door when it comes to Klal Yisrael. You'll see from Mitzrayim that when they're going to go to the bottom of the line, and I'm going to make sure that they come back here. That the Jew is never going to be separated from his destiny. You know how you know that it's going to be permanent? Because they're going to go to the place where it's going to be the worst, the lowest, and I'm still going to reach down, and I'm going to pick them up and bring them back. Bring them back to be able to be a part of this. That is what Geulas Mitzrayim is supposed to answer, the question which is supposed to answer, which is the inescapable destiny of the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can let us drift. In fact, sometimes even put us in a situation of Shval Anoshim Yokim Olecha, where we go to the lowest and the lowest of the low. And when with that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and picks us up, that's what catapults us to the highest of the high. Because then we realize, then we have a chance, a possibility of being able to realize that there's really something there, that there's really a connection between Chal Yisrael and the Jewish people. An inescapable connection. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in this ridiculous situation in Mitzrayim, Shtufei Zima, the opposite of what we're the way we're supposed to characterize things ourselves. Right here we have that with the Jewish people, it's the modesty of the Jewish people. It's, you know, like Adam Harishon, you know, that this area that the Chazal here are aggrandizing so much when it comes to Paro is supposed to be made modest and small and to some degree not at all characterized. And here we find ourselves in this land underneath this king that's so corrupt and so much in this. And that's the matzav of the Jewish people. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? It's not going to overtake you completely. And I'm going to make sure that you're going to come out from that. Maschil b'gnusu mesayim b'shevach. If we are going to start from b'gnus, if we're going to start from the lowest point and go up to the highest point, we can have an appreciation indeed that we can never be lost from Hashem Yisbarach. We can never, ever, ever be lost from Hashem Yisbarach. Now, I do want to point out that this works in Avorim Hayinu. It doesn't work in Mitchilai Ve'Avedezar Hayu Aveseinu. Because Mitchilai Ve'Avedezar Hayu Aveseinu precedes the bris. It precedes the covenant which Hashem made with Avram Avinu. Then if it's that form of genus, if it's that form of lowliness, the idea is that, you know, we're going to start and we're going to talk about how Hashem originally chose us. Right? Because we found Him. And then afterwards, once He chose us, it would be an impossible thing to break. But this idea that in Mitzrayim Hashem sort of like hurdled us as far away as possible as it could be from spirituality, right, into this black hole, right, into this as far away as could possibly be from the Ruchnius, from the spirituality, and then brought us out. That is the way Hashem works. That's the way Hashem works. Maschil b'gnusu mesayim b'shevach. To understand it, to appreciate it as the study in contrasts, to see that Hashem is, you know, He doesn't only relate and look for those who are going to be so immediately, naturally close to Him, but He's able to look behind, look beyond, and to be able to do that and to be able to pick up. You know, as we said, as we say, and I say this, you know, all the time, that this is really to some degree a big thing, it's a big lesson for us. And it's part of the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. What do I mean? On Pesach we have a special mitzvah that we emphasize of tzedakah. Right? Even though every yontav you're supposed to share. On Pesach we have Moed Chitim. Right? Why do you have Moed Chitim on Pesach? Why do we have this great emphasis on giving tzedakah on Pesach? So you can understand, because Pesach is a very expensive holiday, so we have to worry especially that people who don't have, that they should be able to be taken care of. But you know, the Torah constantly tells us, you know, will you be nice to the stranger? Why? Because you know you were strangers in Eretz Canaan. Be nice to the person who suffered in Mitzrayim. You be nice to those who were suffering, because you know you were suffering in Eretz Mitzrayim. And the idea is that when we go to such a lowly level, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I'm great, but you know what my greatness is? You know what my godless is? My godless is my anava. Right, anvisanusai. My godless is that wherever I'm sitting, I'm worrying about the little. I'm worrying about the people down here. And I showed you that in Mitzrayim because you were so remote. You were such lowly strangers, you know, widowed, orphaned. Everything was lost in Mitzrayim, and I was there worrying about you. So tell me something. Now you, in your lives, if you remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, that means you're not going to just, you know, close the door in your house and be comfortable that Baruch Hashem, you got your matzahs, you got your wine, you got your brisket, you know, you got everything that you know that you need. But you're going to be out there thinking about that person over there and that person over there. Is he able to have this? Is he able to have this? If we're remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim, we're remembering this thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to a people who was so far away, so far removed from him. They were under this king who was so ridiculously out of the box, and they were completely subordinate to him. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu reached down and worried about them. So we need to do the same thing ourselves. It's a kiyum, it's a fulfillment of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. Of remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim if we carry these values forward ourselves. Okay. We'll continue. Next week is Chol HaMoed. We'll finish closer to 9 o'clock. You know, we can learn a little bit. I don't see why not. Okay, we can learn a little bit. Good morning. What is that?